You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Brian Altano. Blah, blah, Greg Miller.
Yeah.
We've got a great show for you today. Let's get right into it. Let's just jump into the headlines.
Let's just do it, Damon.
Let's just get right in there. Just get dirty.
Number one story on IGN this week, Evil Within Review, which... the world is shocked to find out actually isn't bad.
I can't believe it.
Yeah?
That first PAX demonstration we saw, I was like, nope. And now everybody says it's coming together.
All this time, multiple IGN editors have seen the game multiple times. Nobody had a good thing to say about it.
It's the opposite of Alien Isolation.
Colin saw it at TGS and he was like, yeah, I'm hoping.
You're right, opposite of Alien Isolation.
That game demoed super well, and then the finished product,
Yeah, and it's not even just IGN. It's getting good reviews.
It's not even, they didn't only dupe IGN.
Yeah, it's got a 76 on Metacritic.
Yeah.
Everything, it seems.
Are you going to play it, Damon?
I guess so. Now I want to check it out because I like survival horror games. Brian, you have been playing it, right?
I've been playing it, yeah. It's really fun. It's giving me a lot of shades of Resident Evil 4, which is one of my all-time favorite games. Right. And more so than I thought it would be. I thought it was just sort of like, oh, spooky town, and there's a guy walking around, and he's got cool hair, and he shoots things. Resident Evil 4. But really, no, it's got a lot of, like, you're in a smoky village, and there's messed up villagers everywhere. There's haystacks, and there's crows, and there's boxes that you smash open.
No, the shooting's super similar.
It's like, after playing Resident Evil 5 and Resident Evil 6, I was like, we'll never get a spiritual successor to Resident Evil 4. And we did. So it's really cool. Some of the stuff I'm not really liking is there are some more kind of scripted areas where it's just like you running through this kind of spooky mansion or a haunted house for just a moment, and then you fall into something, and then there's a cutscene. Some of the side characters are kind of not very interesting to me.
Whoa.
But
it looks gross.
Damon's watching people.
Oh, it's extremely gross and very violent. And that's another thing, like, you kind of have to be ready for that kind of stuff. Like, I remember a lot of us played Tomb Raider, and there's that scene where she goes through that, like, torture pit, right? That tunnel where she's just covered in blood. Like, this game throws scenes like that at you like they're nothing. The first time I died in this game, and this happened very early on, I haven't seen that guy yet. Spoilers. The first time I died, you start off the game fighting a chainsaw man.
Right.
Right. Very early on.
And then what's telling about that is that's like halfway through Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
And then like, nah, man, you're starting with chainsaw.
No, son, chainsaw man here for you now.
We're gonna take you somewhere.
Chainsaw guy is actually in Resident Evil 4. He's you get through the first villager scene and you hear that, rum, 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 and then he shows up. But you have to get through some. It's about 20 minutes in. But this game, I remember the chainsaw guy, there's a couple times in Resident Evil 4 where he'd put the chainsaw against your head and it was gross and you'd see blood splattering. But this, like, I got pinned down, he chainsawed through my head, and my head just rolled away. And it's like, well, welcome to Evil Within. I'm like, oh God, I am not ready for this.
Man, I have Resident Evil 4, and it's one of my gaming shames. We talked about this on Game Scoop last week or recently about the games we never played, and I said Chrono Trigger, but I've actually never played Resident Evil 4 either.
Because, oh my God.
Wow. It's too stressful, it's too spooky. I got into the village and I was really stressed out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm shooting the guys and then I feel like I'm wasting ammo if I don't get them in the head, and it's stressing me out, and I would have to turn it off.
We were just talking yesterday.
Now go back and play Monkey Ball.
Yeah. We were just talking yesterday. Another game you haven't played is Last of Us. And maybe you wouldn't be able to handle that either.
It's a similar reason. I don't like stressful, tense game. Like, I have no problem with like challenging games, really hard games, but that stress.
Yeah, what about like Tetris when the screen's almost full?
No, he gets
Sonic.
So he has the rage quit.
The pieces are coming in too
Sonic
fast.
The Hedgehog when he's about to drown.
That's terrifying.
That's super spooky.
Well, it's I love that because it's scary, but it's also, it coincides with the one of the best moments in gaming, which is when he eats the bubble and it's like, wah, wah, yeah. And he's back to life.
Yeah, that's like when you smash open a crate and get an herb.
But yeah, Evil Within's cool. It's given me a better sort of horror experience than I think Alien did. And yeah, I agree with you in the way those were previewed. It's completely lopsided. But this is weird with previews. Like, Wolfenstein didn't preview well either.
And, yeah, that's right. And then that game was awesome.
And it's great. So there's still a lot that gets put into that vertical slice, and then you play it at something like PAX where it's loud, but you have headphones on, there's people all around you, and you're running around, there's a chainsaw guy, and you're like, what is this? Why is this happening? And then you leave, and you go to IGN, and you go, well, I didn't really like what I played. And all I could do is judge what they gave me to play. And, you know, it's not the most fair way to tell you if a game's going to be good or not, and sometimes it's not indicative at all, but we have to work with what they hand us, and if they don't hand us something good, then we walk away telling you, like, this is not that great.
If it's an out-of-context, disjointed preview, as the original Evil Within was.
Yeah. And, you know, playing it, I can totally see why that would be, because it's out of context and disjointed just from chapter to chapter in that game.
Yeah.
So getting removed of any context whatsoever, I could see being completely confusing.
The character designs seem absolutely insane in that game.
Yeah.
It's like off the wall, bananas, never seen anything like it.
Yep.
Another big game out this week in review was Borderlands, the pre-sequel, which computer we've got B-roll running of right
beep
now.
Beep, beep, beep.
I'm glad that, so there's three big games out this week, and they all got good reviews.
Yeah.
Evil Within, Borderlands, and Bayonetta, or maybe Bayonetta's last week, but reviews up. But yeah, Borderlands pre-sequel seems to be more Borderlands, which is good for people who are looking for that.
I'm no longer looking for
that. I was going to say, are any of us those people?
No.
I would totally play it
on
current
PS4.
Gen consoles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just don't like hooking up the old consoles. We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably come to PS4, Xbox One.
We were talking about this on Beyond. How far out you think it's going to be?
6 months.
Yeah,
seems like a good
May.
You think they tease it at? What if they do this? Stick with me. At E3, teaser during one of the things of Borderlands 3, Borderlands current gen, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end, they also make the announcement that, you know, this fall you can expect the collection and or just the pre-sequel.
I think it's too late.
But they want to make sure you get your money's worth.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true.
It looks super good. I'm glad that... So it's not the same development team, right?
Right.
It was handled by...
2K Australia.
I was going to say, I didn't want to get it wrong, because there's all kinds of 2K studios, but it wasn't Gearbox doing it directly, and that's always, like, really dicey, right? Like, you don't know what you're going to get. But I'm glad they sort of figured out what makes Borderlands Borderlands.
Well, they work really close together with each other.
But it's still always one of those things where, like, actually Nintendo is a company that does that super well by giving, like, F-Zero to Sega and stuff like that. But... I'm just glad a new team was able to pull it off.
Yeah,
I wish Nintendo would do that again. By the way,
I know it's been what, we haven't had an F-Zero game since the GameCube.
That's
criminal.
Yeah. It's a weird slot for Borderlands, the pre-sequel, though, because I feel like people were super excited about it when it got announced and debuted. You can play as Claptrap, amazing. They showed the shield. You know, it takes the damage. You throw it out and give it back to the enemies. But it seems like they waited just long enough where the current gen consoles have got their legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, if I really want a looting game, I can go play Destiny. If I really want this, I can keep playing this. Like, I'm now locked into that box. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not turning my PlayStation 3 on for anything anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be very curious to see how this game sells. because Borderlands is a huge franchise with our audience, but this is a weird game.
But even like, you know, when Borderlands 2 arrived, right, like that was a moment. Mm-hmm. Everyone was playing that. That was a huge deal in like pre-sequel.
Phenomenal game. One of the best games of last generation.
Yeah.
It could also be one of those situations where like the four of us are maybe not that typical. Sure. Like there are hundreds of millions of last gen consoles out there. That might be an exaggeration, but there's a huge number of consoles out there that are still getting played every day.
About 3 billion.
There are billions of Xbox 360s.
More than the stars in the sky.
Grains of sand on the beaches. maybe we're just sort of not typical.
We're not the target audience. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, if I was still playing all my games on PS3, I'd be like, oh man, this is great, thank you. But I'm not.
Well, like, and I also, it's the same with the game you mentioned, Destiny, like, that is a last-gen and current-gen game, but I never, ever think about it as being a 360 or PS3 game. But it is, and there's, you know, it's sold, you know, well on those consoles, presumably.
Yeah, so. I never think of that, but good point.
Thanks, Damon.
The best reviewed game of the moment, and the one that I am worried about people playing, is Bayonetta 2.
Yeah. You're worried about people playing it?
Well, Damon thinks it's too graphic for people. He doesn't want them to play it. He's worried about them.
The Wii U has a very small install base.
Yeah, but this game was financed by Nintendo, published by Nintendo, and everyone keeps saying, by the end of this generation, we'll see it on the PS4 and Xbox One. And I'm like, I don't know that that's the case. Like,
I don't know.
You probably need to get a Wii U to play this. I'm willing to eat my words if that changes in years. But
no, I'd say you have to get a Wii U to play this. I got it a year ago where people were sort of like, yeah, the Wii U is a waste of time. But like, I would say it goes toe-to-toe with any console right now. Like, this is just another feather in that hat. Like,
the Wii U is great.
Yeah, and Bayonetta 2 is awesome. I've been playing a lot of it. I'm someone that didn't get super into the first game.
That's why I'm so surprised people like this one so much, because people weren't that crazy about the first game.
So this is this is a weird word to use, but I feel like it's a lot more accessible. Which, looking at this, doesn't look like at all. But the combat is just kind of everything I want in a video game. It's like it's incredibly tight.
I just heard it's so perfect.
Yeah, it just really works. Like, I mean, a lot of the timing felt off on a lot of things. Like in the first Bayonetta, like it felt like a much more expert level game. Which, if that's your thing, that's awesome. But me, like, I work my ass off all day and night, and then I go home and I want to play a video game. I don't want to be the best in the world at it. I don't want to play things in the hardest setting anymore. Yeah. I want to fly through. I want to hit buttons and beat the shit out of a giant dragon.
Insane things happen. Yeah. There's a woman shooting guns from her feet.
Yeah, it's very stylish. It's very cool. The art direction's awesome. The set pieces are amazing. You forget that you're playing a game on what is ostensibly a last-gen console, quote-unquote. It just works, and it's really fun. I really implore people who have any interest in playing probably the best action game in a long time.
So not only
to check this out, and there's this,
all the costume, the crazy costume awesome.
Stuff, which is like, really cool.
I really want to emphasize that not only did Bayonetta 2 review well, but it reviewed like incredibly well. Yeah. This is
Go ahead, I'll let you say it.
It's got a 91 on Metacritic and it got a 9.5 on IGN, which is tied for the highest review score we've given all year.
So the highest score for a new game, Banner Saga, was the other 9.5.
Wow. Yeah.
Like Last of Us Remastered got a 9.5 also. Or 10, right? Or 10, yeah. But that's a last year game. So
There's stuff like Shovel Knight and other incredible games, but in terms of like big AAA production design, like Bayonetta is probably better than people think it is. And I haven't, like, the reviews caught me off guard. I'm not into, like, I was never that into God of War, never that into Devil May Cry. Like, it's just not a genre that I'm super into. But this being so good and the reviews being so positive kind of make me want to check it out.
It's a really long launch trailer.
And I
like that it includes the original Bayonetta, because I slept on that for the reason, like, I'm not wild about the genre.
It feels kind of different than a lot of the games you mentioned, too, because I feel like it... God of War almost takes itself too seriously in that regard, but Bayonetta is so hyper-stylized from top to bottom that...
It's like the Ninja Gaiden, like those third-person action, like they've never really been my thing, but this one looks so stylish and, and I know, like, if people want to have an argument about, like, the sexiness, that's fine.
Sure.
But I just think, like, I'm glad it's doing its own thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not afraid to be like, yo, this is what I am.
Yeah, I'm Bayonetta 2.
I see you over there doing your thing, and I respect that.
People now I'm gonna cover my bits with my hair and smash you around.
People point out that it seems odd for Nintendo to publish this game.
Yeah.
But they actually have a history of doing stuff like this. They had Conker's Bad Fur Day on the N64. They had Resident Evil 4 on GameCube. They brought Grand Theft Auto to the DS.
Chinatown Wars.
Yeah, Chinatown Wars.
Or even something like, I mean, I don't know, like Perfect Dark and GoldenEye were rated M.
Yeah.
You know, so
for mature.
Yep.
Yeah, Conker let you bounce on a sunflower's tits.
Yeah, that's so. That was a thing. That was a real thing.
It had swearing. It had the swears.
It did, and that was incredibly controversial at the time.
Yeah.
Especially with the Nintendo logo on it. It is weird to see that Nintendo Games logo at the front, and then she comes out and she's half naked and her hair is beating people up, but this is a weird world we live in.
Speaking of weird worlds, did you hear the one about the four men in Pennsylvania who were arrested for smuggling cocaine in Xboxes?
Well, I thought you were joking at the start of the show.
Well, nope. What kind of Xbox?
Original Xbox.
Oh, the original Xbox.
No, not the original Xbox.
Well, it fits the most cocaine.
That's what I was going to say.
That's immediately why the cops are like, wait a second. Nobody carries around original Xboxes anymore.
I just thought they were using OG Xbox because it seemed like they were, were gangsta.
Yep. Is that like the Cheech and Chong pot car?
I don't know.
Yeah, that is a...
So I love this story. I think the investigators suspected that they were using Xboxes to smuggle cocaine in from the Dominican Republic, and they had their suspects. So they intercepted a suspicious-looking package that they thought was going to be one of them. It was addressed to their location, their house. An undercover agent delivered the package to them, and one guy signed for it. Then a few minutes later, he carried the package to another house down the street where his three accomplices were. Then they put it in the trunk and drove to a nearby town, and they tailed them there. And then when they got out of their car to this new location, three of them tried to flee on foot. Eventually, they were all apprehended. And then in the various houses, they found like console parts and all this cocaine. There was cocaine in the Xbox. There was 1,100 grams of cocaine. Just remind me about how much that is worth in street value. It's over $100,000 worth of cocaine that would fit in one Xbox. So yeah, that's what they would use it. And so, and they found they found various console parts indicating that they had been using Xboxes for a while to do this.
So many Xboxes sent to their death as a drug mule.
So that's weird because I don't. Have any of you guys ever like flown with a console?
Yeah,
it's kind of a problem. Like I've gotten through security checkpoints and they're just like, "What's going on with this?" Actually, I don't know if I told you this story. I was flying out of Newark, New Jersey, and my Vita went through the scanner and they put on the siren thing.
No, they didn't.
And yes, they did. And all four rows in the TSA stopped. And they're like, we have to do a scan. And they're like, what is this? And I'm like, it's a PlayStation Vita. And then
PlayStation doesn't make handhelds. Yeah. Get them.
Well, I've never seen one of these. And 3 minutes later, they're like, all right, you're free to go.
Yeah.
And I walked away and I was like, okay.
When, when I left the New York PlayStation 4 launch event, that was the first PlayStation 4s that they gave anybody. Oh, so I got to go through TSA with it. And they stopped me and went through and like, what is this? I'm like, it's a PlayStation 4. It's like, whoa. All
right. I thought these were only out in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big thing when iPads first came out, too.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
exactly.
is this?
The thing is, you can't fit a lot of cocaine in an iPad.
Nope.
No. The Xbox, I mean, man, that is. But see, like, it's just, I would think to look at that, it's a dangerous looking box as is. Like if it's not full of coke, it's maybe full of bombs.
If it like drops on your foot, you're gonna have a broken foot. Like, exactly. You gotta watch out for that.
The other weird thing is that, you know, on the package form, you have to write like what the contents are. And it said something like new Xbox 360 use. But it wasn't an Xbox 360, it was an Xbox.
Idiot drug dealers.
That's the real crime.
Come on.
I mean, drug dealers, would you confuse heroin and weed? No? Well, then don't confuse the Xbox and the Xbox 360.
I've always heard lots of consoles have, like the GameCube had that little port that was kind of empty.
Yeah.
And like other consoles have had that, like a little flap you can flip up and just has different things.
The
and that's, I've heard that that's a good spot to like stash. You know, whatever. If you don't want your
paraphernalia,
if you don't want your mom to find your, I don't know.
Your mom's going through every port on your GameCube.
You just snitched on so many kids. So many moms are looking.
Oh yeah, because so many moms are watching GameScoop right
fans.
Now.
Big fans. Mom
Big
fans. Scoop.
Mom
yeah.
Scoop. Mom Scoop.
It's about 45% of our audience, right?
Yeah.
More than the stars in the sky.
More than the grains of sand on the beach. That's how many moms.
In today's news, that's never going to happen. Michael Keaton says he would play Batman again if Tim Burton directs.
It's a great idea. They should do Dark Knight Returns is what they should do.
Do Batman
Where he's
Beyond.
Just all old and grizzled.
Yeah.
I would love it, sure, but that's never going to happen.
Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie. It will always be my favorite Batman movie. It was just such a perfect combination, but I my connection with Tim Burton films has thinned more and more over the years.
He used to be like top tier. Yeah. Like, so it's a new Tim Burton movie's coming. Now it's like, oh, it's a new Tim Burton.
That's exact. That's a, that is my exact reaction. I'm like, oh, Johnny Depp's in it. Yes.
And Helena Bonham Carter
is in it,
and it's just a remake of something else.
Yeah, that exactly.
He's gonna ruin.
That was a movie I liked when, as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Willy Wonka or Planet of the Apes that he ruined. Like, just now.
Yeah, his Planet of the Apes was really weird.
It
was
awful. Like
I do want to see Birdman though.
They got that. That's cool. Really good. They got the ape kiss at the end of it.
That's not him though. He didn't do that,
that's
right?
That's right. He made
it. No, but that's Michael Keaton.
Yeah, no. I was just making sure Tim Burton wasn't attached to that as well.
So where did the penguin get his penguins from? That's always been unclear.
The zoo.
The zoo. Yeah.
Remember his base is at the zoo.
Like underneath the zoo.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And how did they know? Like the penguins seemed to kind of know what was going on, and that always confused me as a kid.
Because he was like the penguin.
Yeah, he's a penguin.
At what part are you talking about? When they walked around ready to shoot off the rockets? Because that remember they had the little mind control deal on.
Yeah, yeah.
And they hacked it and then turned them back.
Before that, they were just a fan of his.
But then
work.
Now, of course, why those like six emperor penguins knew to like walk his dead body in the
and
water?
It's so sad.
There's some weird stuff.
It's sad, but also confusing to little Justin.
I like that you call them emperor penguins. That's really.
I'm pretty sure I know my penguins.
They're big.
In that interview with Michael Keaton, he also talked about how, like, the movie studio execs were like, does Batman have to be so dark? Like, that's when they went.
And that's when he bailed out.
That's when he bailed out, and they made Batman Forever, and it was not
Forever was all right. Yeah. Batman and Robin was the bad one.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Well,
an abomination.
Do you watch Flash, by the way? Check it out? What'd you think?
I like it a lot. I've only seen episode one. I haven't watched episode two yet.
I liked it enough. I wouldn't say a lot.
But. I mean, well, you know that I like that. Like, it's like the, it, like, watching it, it's fun. Arrow isn't. Fun, right? Yeah. Arrow's like very heavy.
Oh, I think Arrow's still fun.
It's fun. I mean, I love Arrow too. I'm just saying there's a different.
It's not
tone
a lighthearted
there.
Show.
Exactly. Flash is lighthearted and it's almost like a Spider-Man. It's almost like a Spider-Man show.
Spider-Man!
Hey, Flash, you need us to swing these things? No, man, I run. Okay, Flash, see you later.
What do you think about them? There being a different Flash for the movie?
I'm not a fan of that, but I mean, I knew it was going to happen, right? Like, it's a long time ago, I believe it was Joey Esposito wrote a piece for IGN. That was like if DC really wanted to just get going and not do what they're doing now, which was spin their wheels and try to figure all this stuff out in the movie, they should have just taken the Smallville universe and made that into the movie universe, because then you would have had everybody established already and let it go. But of course, TV actors to movie actors, it's not the exact same thing.
You know, right, that's true.
But I mean, they could really open up awesome possibilities with it if they just talk about like, they don't, I mean, the big part of DC, of course, is the multiverse. So if you just have it where there's like a glance or something, even on TV show where there's like they're fighting somebody and they kind of see through like you know the universe at that moment to see that there is in the new 52 that there is this thing going on with the Flash. That'd be awesome. There's a lot of cool ways to do stuff with it to make it really really rad.
But I think I do think it's a missed opportunity. So I think it's fine to have their you know TV universe and their movie universe to be separate things. That's not the direction Marvel's going. But if DC wants to do that, they can. Like, be like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We got our TV universe and our movie universe, but then, like, Gotham's not a part of the TV universe.
Yes, it's weird.
And so it's like they're just kind of half-assing the whole thing.
Sure. Well, it just gets convoluted when you have all these different studios and stuff working on it, and then that's where it gets
weird.
Marvel
figured it out.
The big thing is going to be is, like, I guess this is looking way down the line, right? Because what year is The Flash? Do you have the one pulled up for when The Flash movie is going to be?
It's like years from now.
So that's the thing. Is like
2027.
Yeah.
If the Flash TV show continues and is it a raging success or whatever, right? Like, are people going to be down
to see? I love that movie. I want
to
watch the show.
No, I meant more like I've been watching the show for 6 years. Do I really want to go see the origin story again? Unless it's Wally West.
Right.
By then, they'll have introduced Wally West in the show, guaranteed. So then what if it's Bart Allen? But then that totally screws up the timeline. Jake Eric?
Here's my thing as a kind of outsider to this. I haven't been interested in a lot of the DC comic book characters since I was... Whereas Marvel has always sort of like captivated me in some way. I've found their characters a lot more endearing and kind of infinitely more accessible and just flat out interesting. And I don't feel like a lot of these new things are really doing it in sort of being like, this is why you should care about The Flash again.
Yeah.
Like his movie is interesting, but to me as a character, I've never really cared.
Well, do you watch Arrow?
I did. I watched like the first season of Arrow.
And it didn't click for you?
Well, it was okay, but I was just like, do I want to sit through another 24 hours of this?
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot. It's a commitment.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, it's like campy, but it's super fun.
Sure.
So speaking of campy, did you finish The Strain all the way to the end?
No. Should I?
I liked it, but then I thought the finale was pretty disappointing.
Okay.
So
interesting.
It just doesn't end on. It's just like kind of like.
And we're done.
And that's the end. Come back next year.
Are you guys watching Gotham?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you like it?
I don't love it, but I mean, I don't know. I'm concerned.
Yeah, I just don't hear good things.
My concern is if I back off, it's going to get good again, and I don't have to catch up.
Yeah.
So do I just stick it out until it gets canceled for a little bit? It might be the easiest way. I mean, there's on DVR. I watch them whenever.
Sure.
Now, I mean, like, I just did episode 3 of Gotham, which they already introduced Balloon Man, at which point you're just like,
that's a character.
See what you got. Let's
Balloon
see
Man.
Let's see what your next two episodes
what
are.
What about the Rat Catcher? They got him?
I haven't seen the Rat Catcher yet. No.
All right.
But Flash, I thought, opened the pilot. Did you see last night's episode?
No, I just saw the pilot.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it tonight. Yeah, I had a ton of
fun. I like that Arrow was on it.
Yeah. I like that universe is continuing.
Yeah.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Tahir did. And he has a question about Assassin's Creed.
Well, he said it looked up like you were surprised you got the name right.
Well, I mean, who
did a good job, right? Well, we said you did.
Sounded good to me.
Exactly.
If it sounds good, feels good, must be good.
Yeah.
He has a question about Assassin's Creed. Computer, we're launching Assassin's Creed B-roll. Boop, boop, boop. He says, I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan, but one of the things that has always puzzled me is why there has never been a crouch function. It's as if all those master assassins are so confident in their stealth abilities, they never needed to crouch. I found that quite odd. I know that they've subsequently brought in contextual crouching, and AC5 is going to have a dedicated stealth button. Careful calling it AC5.
Yeah.
But I wonder why this was never implemented right from the start. My question is, can you guys think of any other quirks like this for other games that you have played? Functions that either exist or don't exist, but seemingly make no sense, and is at odds with what the game is about?
I mean, the thing about Assassin's Creed was the whole thing was you're always like hiding in plain sight, right?
Yeah.
Like you're blending in with the crowd, and that's the method of stealth. Like it's not literally like you can't see me like Splinter Cell.
Yeah.
I like the contextual.
No one saw what he just did, Greg.
I don't care.
I like the contextual.
You saw it. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
You move into a shrub and you just automatically crouch down.
Yeah.
That's enough for me.
Also invisible in that shrub.
Yeah. It's that weird thing of going back and playing the old Metal Gears where there was no crouch as well. Like, after playing Peace Walker for so many hours, I was like, oh, I'll go back and play Metal Gear 1 or whatever. And there's no crouch. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's just either I'm standing or I'm prone. Like, this is terrible. Yeah. What the hell?
I mean, yeah, I agree. I like the contextual stuff. Like, I mean, it feels kind of weird. Like, I like playing Shadow of Mordor when your character's walking around and he walks into a bush and all of a sudden he becomes hologram with the bush and someone's like, oh, I think I heard a goat over there. Yeah, it's just a talking bush. Like, there's no need for that, really. It's kind of strange. And Assassin's Creed's a different story because it's like, I feel like there's already 7,500 actions mapped to that one button in Assassin's Creed. So this would just be one more.
They abandoned any pretense of it being a stealth franchise after Assassin's Creed 1, really. And that's not a value judgment. Like, I think Assassin's Creed is really good at what it is, but it is an action franchise. It's not a stealth franchise.
Yeah.
They and brought some of that back in 4.
You have, like, grenade launchers now in Assassin's Creed Rogue.
And that's fine, but...
No, I love Assassin's Creed.
You know, I don't know.
We were talking, Justin, about funky, like, control schemes. Doesn't Shadow of Mordor have, like, isn't, like, stealth and finishing move are, like, the same button?
No, run and stealth are the same button. This is a great game. I absolutely love game, but I feel like there must have been a way for that control scheme to be streamlined.
I mean, still to this day, there's games that come out where, like, there's a superhero character who can hop over a 3-foot wall, and it's
that's always a classic example.
Yeah, and I don't know why that's always still a thing, but it is.
Time and money.
Yeah, I guess so.
The big thing for me that jumps out, and this is another franchise that I love, is that sometimes the game world ends up being molded to match like the abilities that you have, and that's Gears of War.
Yeah.
Like that game is about cover, and so you'll see waist-high walls everywhere. The whole game world is just full of waist-high walls, but if you're not a cover shooter, suddenly the game world doesn't have any waist-high walls in it. And like, I get why it's like that, right? Like, you design fun, interactive spaces for players to, you know, sort of go through the map in the way that they want. But it is a little bit, I don't know. It's very artificial feeling sometimes. Yeah.
Sure. This is Courtney. He or she says...
Mm, well done.
The studio working on Rainbow Six Siege just detailed its one lifestyle of FPS, meaning no respawns.
One life to live.
Computer, launching B-roll.
Beep, boop, beep, boop.
Do you think that this will catch on with other shooters, or will it remain a mode only suited to the Rainbow Six series? So in the new Rainbow Six Siege is multiplayer only. Two-team is team-based, and there are no respawns. You die, you're out for the rest of the match.
Yeah. Lots of games do that, though.
They all have, it's always a mode, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's always my favorite. That's my preferred way to play Gears. Well, it might not be my preferred way to play other shooters, but I do enjoy dabbling in that mode.
Mm-hmm. I think it's cool. I don't know how often... I mean, I guess it depends on how popular Rainbow Six Siege gets. If that becomes super popular, sure, there's going to be like copycat games that take that on too.
I mean, I just like that it's it makes you play the game differently, and it makes you be thoughtful, and it makes you work as a team. If you don't do those things, you'll lose. So yeah, I guess it doesn't make you do it. But like, I guess I'm kind of hung up on Gears right now. But like, Gears like Rainbow Six is a game that's really about positioning and flanking, and that's important. And like, yeah, you need to have aim and twitch skill, but it really is like the tactics of the scene matter in Gears, especially when you only have one life. Like, and that is awesome. And I think that's going to suit Rainbow Six really, really well, better than like how would Respawn's. I guess I never even gave it any thought, but it would almost feel weird in that game world to like come back in the bedroom and be like, all right, you know, I'm back somehow. Like, where's the hostage?
Right.
It kind of doesn't even make sense.
I do like what you made a really good point about sort of making players be more thoughtful about their actions.
Yeah.
That's a complete opposite of the way a lot of shooters are training players to play now, which is just like, yeah, run in, screaming, shooting, die, things, it clicks and you restart. And
you'll
like,
be back in literally a fraction of a second.
Yeah, like life is completely...
That's what Destiny is, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, life is completely meaningless in most video games, and I think it's...
Whoa, that's quite a statement.
Well, no, really. I mean, it's sort of just like you run in, you shoot things, you die, and you start again. There's no repercussion at all, and there's no thoughtfulness to it, and there's no quality in which they teach you that, like, this is something you should care about. Your actions mean something.
Well, and like, there's a real pun. Like, you're going to have to sit out for minutes not having fun if you're the first one to die. So don't be the first one to die.
Well, I like that because people are constantly like, make video games more realistic. And it's like, all right, cool. Here's one where when you die, you're dead.
You get keep in mind, Brian, you were just talking about how you want to come home and play a game and play through it and just blast things and be ready to go. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the opposite to it. And I mean, you were talking about what's going to happen with this. Remember, this is how Last of Us worked. And so you haven't seen a huge amount of clones pop up. And everybody loved that, that multiplayer.
Yeah. And I guess... Again, I'd never even really given it much thought with Rainbow Six, but now that you have this B-roll playing, like, he blasts through the window and killed a dude, and it already said 5 versus 4. Yeah. So they were already kind of, like, right even from the very first reveal, like, they're not, you know, that's how the game was already
being shown off.
Yeah, I think it's great, and I think it suits this style of game.
Have you guys thought about this game recently? I just sort of remembered about how excited I am for it.
It was watching it reminds me of
It
hadn't, I'd like almost forgotten about it, and then I was like, oh yeah, Rainbow Six Siege.
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. I'm a little worried or skeptical about how the finished product will shape up to, you know, sort of the hype that it got at E3.
Well,
like shooting through walls and stuff. I feel like it's a game that people will find some easy way to cheese.
Sure.
Like, okay, if you shoot through the wall at this exact spot, like, you know, it'll be almost impossible for you to be you know, counterattacked. Like,
and growing up, I had this best friend. His name was Mike. Uh-huh. He lived in, and he wanted to play laser tag at his house.
Yeah.
But he could just sit on the couch and knew how to bounce it off mirrors and like his clocks and stuff to get you.
We were just talking about best friends.
I know.
I was just talking about your best friend Mike, actually. Damon, can you run that B-roll?
Yeah.
No.
It's like that scene in Dark Knight and the Joker.
I think this happens a lot these days where we see like a game gets like the lid blown off at E3 and we see so much of it and then we don't hear about it for like 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah.
Not even like a screenshot or a teaser trailer or anything like that. Like just nothing. It goes into radio silence. So.
I think the best thing about Rainbow Six Siege is also like what worries me about it, that it is so flexible that you can blast through the floor, you can go through whatever window you want. Like, I feel like the hardcore, like, people that are really into Rainbow Six will, like, optimize that immediately and just know the best way to do every map.
Yeah,
and it'll almost feel the opposite of how you want it to feel, where it's wide open and there are all these tactics that work.
Like, well, it was like when I used to play GoldenEye with friends, we'd play in the facility, and I knew where all the spawn points were, and we'd play with proximity mines.
Yep.
So you'd put the proximity mines in all the spawn points, and it'd be like, da-da, 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 and it just kept looping, and people would come over and be like, this is not fun.
Yeah, you're having fun, though.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm the best at GoldenEye in the world. And people are like, I'm never coming to your dorm room again. This is a nightmare.
Yeah, that's my concern about Rainbow Six. Hope they balance it.
All right, computer exiting B-roll. This is a question from Victor. It's about Pokemon.
He didn't catch them all.
Says, I just listened to your podcast about the fall games you were going to play and realized the sad truth that, as far as I know, a lot of the IGN staff just doesn't care for the Pokemon games. Why is that?
Pokemans?
We've all played a lot of Pokemon.
To me, Pokemon sparked my interest in video games, and the series has evolved into something very interesting, seeing as how many people play it differently, and I find it a bit of a shame that people don't want to play it because it's for kids or the old Pokemon games are better. I'm 20 years old and still love Pokemon. The question is not just to you, but the listeners as well. If you're one of the people that won't even give the new games a try, why is that?
Hmm.
First of all, there are two new Pokemon games coming out this November.
Yeah. I'm one of the biggest Nintendo fans at IGN, easily. I've loved them since I was a kid. I play all Nintendo games. Pokemon is the one thing that never really grabbed me. And I actually,
except Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, except Pokemon Snap. And I dabbled here and there, but like last year, I played, what was it, X and Y?
Yeah.
For the first time. And I got into it for a little while, but then I just sort of realized, like, this is a lot. Like, there's a lot to take in here. And I just don't have that sort of commitment for a game of that level. I think the art is charming. I think that the concept is wonderful. It's got sort of elements of Zelda, which I grew up playing and loving. Like, it's a Nintendo franchise. It's a huge Nintendo franchise. Mm-hmm. But it just never really grabbed me the way the other ones did. So I don't know. Like, to me, each new iteration doesn't do enough to be like, this is the one you have to play. Yeah. If I played it and I'm sort of okay with it, but it doesn't grab me, then, like, I don't know if any of the new ones will.
That's kind of how I feel about it. So Pokemon came out in 1996, and I was in college, and I got into it because I was just a big Nintendo fan, and I loved anything that they put out. But even then, let's be honest, I was probably too old to be playing Pokemon when I was 18. So now, when I play it, I definitely feel like, this just doesn't feel like it's for me. Five years ago, the Pokemon came out for DS, the one that came with a bedometer.
Yep.
And everyone in the IGN office was playing it, so I was like, oh, maybe I haven't played Pokemon in a while. I'll pick it up and I'll check it out. But a few hours into it, I was like,
Exact same thing. This is good. I understand where it's going and what it's doing. It's just like, not
for me.
Not what I need.
Yeah. I played one Pokemon game, the DS one, whatever one that one was. And
Pikachu is still super cute, though. I totally got that.
And I'd never, so that was my first exposure to Pokemon. I just missed the earlier ones, and I just found it to be really slow. I would get into the battles, and they would be so slow-paced. And, like, maybe you can speed up the dialogue or whatever. Like, that's not a review, but it's just, like, I was just bored. Like, I played it, and I found walking slow, battles slow, everything slow. And, like, that was my lasting impression, and I just didn't have any desire to pick it up.
Like, I feel like a game like that has to sort of, like, hook you with its, you know, its content and reward and threat loop of just sort of being, like, you get this, and you do this, and you get this, and you do this, and you get this. And it never really did that for me. And I love collecting things in games, but just that never really grabbed me. That being said, we do have people at IGN that enjoy Pokemon. I mean, like, Jose Otero's huge into Pokemon. He plays all of them for hundreds of hours. Send him your questions about Pokemon. I just can't answer them for you.
We also, the interesting thing about Pokemon collecting is I love collecting things in games. You know, I want to check off all the things. I want to get all the achievements. I want to do that stuff. But, like, in some, like, weird cases, it almost has the opposite effect on me. Where, like, okay, I know I'm never going to get them all.
Right.
So why should I get any of them?
Yes. Like,
tagline is gotta, but I don't.
Yeah.
It's like if I'm not gonna get all 150, I kind of don't even want to get like the first 10. Like why?
Your tagline is a threat.
You gotta catch them all.
You gotta catch them all.
That's how I felt about like the crackdown orbs.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not realistically gonna track down all 500 of these. So why even bother trying to get like the 450 that I will find?
Yep. I got about like 50% in the Shadow of Mordor, and I'm like, do I want 100% this game? I could.
That's a choice that you make with every game.
That's a deep, you know, that's a big commitment. I was playing Hyrule Warriors. I'm like, what's it like to 100% this game? Turns out it's like 150 hours of play. I'm like, that's just, I can't. Like, for some people who only play two or three games a year, that's great. But, I mean, I got to play them all.
Before we go this week, what are we playing right now?
I'm still playing Smash.
Mm-hmm. On 3DS?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. A little bit of Smash, a little bit of Mordor, a little bit of Bayonetta, and Evil Within. I think I walked away from Alien.
I walked away from Alien too.
Yeah.
How far did you get into it?
About 5 hours, six hours.
I wasn't even that. I was probably more like three, but I was just kind of like,
I wanted to, but I heard it. You know, it's 20 hours long, and I'm like,
I'm also playing a lot of Clicker Heroes in my browser.
I know you. You and Mitch are into that Clicker Heroes.
And playing Caleb. Minecraft Vita.
You really like the Minecraft.
It finally got to Vita. So it's the platform it was destined for.
Yeah, it's the place to be.
The best place for it to be. And I think I'm probably gonna kick on Sleeping Dogs Definitive Edition.
That was a game. Did you play the first one?
I didn't get super deep into it. Maybe 3 hours, and something else distracted me.
Game's so good.
I loved what I played, and that's the thing is like now that I was playing Shadow of Mordor, and it's like, oh, cool. Like I'm not high fantasy. I love all your systems. This is cool, but it's not the world I want to be in.
Yeah.
And that's totally a world I do want to be in. But I'm really honestly just killing times until Freedom Wars on Vita, because that's right up my alley.
When is Freedom Wars out?
October 26th, I'll say.
A couple weeks.
Yeah.
So I passed on Spelunky HD when it came to Xbox 360, because I was so disappointed that they changed the art style.
Yeah.
Because it was originally like pixel art.
Yeah.
And then they changed it to just like sort of cartoon.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm not even.
No, thank you. I'll vote with my wallet.
But then I heard lots of great things about it. Everybody loved it.
Andrew Goldfarb
loved it. Now that it was free on PlayStation 4 with Plus, I downloaded it, and holy balls.
Yeah.
That game is so good.
Yeah.
Spelunky is fantastic.
Not stop playing that game.
I still think the art's a mistake.
I agree with that. I wish there was like an option to like revert back to the pixel style.
I thought there was.
I don't think so.
Damon, let me ask you something. Are you playing the other free PlayStation Plus
the cat,
game,
Pix the Cat? I downloaded it and tried it, but I was like,
Didn't really get you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks insane. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet.
It's got sort of shades of Pac-Man Championship Edition as it sort of evolves.
It's like part Pac-Man, part Snake, part...
I can see why it didn't grab you to begin with, because like the first few levels are very kind of.
But as you
like,
get further and further and further and further down, it starts getting crazy.
Also, I downloaded it at the same time as Spelunky, I'm just playing.
There's a clear winner there.
Yeah, for sure. If you are a PlayStation Plus subscriber and you haven't played Spelunky, do not miss that game.
Yep,
it's awesome. Also, if you're not a PlayStation Plus subscriber, play Spelunky.
Just buy it. It's everywhere now.
It's really, really good. I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. So thank you, Justin. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Greg. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon, this is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.